Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's time for a look back on today's match. This is the Full Time Report with the voices of our Atlanta United, Mike Conti and Jason Longshore. The home for MLS in Atlanta, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Well, if Orlando beats Atlanta United and no one's here to see it, did it happen?
Unfortunately, the standings say yes.
Yeah, unlike the tree falling in the forest, there were a few witnesses in the building today and many more on television and many of you listening on radio. You got to give fair play to Orlando City. They did enough building that two-goal lead in the first half where, even though Atlanta United played very well in the second half, very positively in the second half, I should say, still not enough to overcome that two-goal deficit, and Orlando City, for the first time ever, defeats Atlanta United 3-1. Two goals in the first half by Junior Urso and Chris Mueller, and then the gut punch by Nani in the 87th minute, just 4 minutes after Brooks Lennon had given Atlanta United a lifeline with a headed-in goal off a cross by Jurgen Damm. And Brooks Lennon voted by the fans as the man of the match, brought to you by Heineken. First goal in an Atlanta United shirt for Brooks Lennon, who also led the team with two shots on target. He also had three shots tonight, did Brooks Lennon. As far as his work in the distribution is concerned, he passed it almost 90%, and of his 48 passes, 43 were scored as good passes by Opta. Lennon also won three aerial duels today, which was a team high. So Brooks Lennon has been working his tail off for this team. I'm glad the fans acknowledge him, and I'm glad he got the goal too in being named man of the match by Heineken. He has played almost incredibly every minute of every match this year.
And high energy minutes too. I mean, he's covering a lot of ground, whether he's playing as a wing back, a right winger. He's holding down the whole right side, and today was his best performance in an Atlanta United shirt. He nearly had a goal early that forced Galese into a big save. He gets the goal late that gives Atlanta a lifeline. Still making big defensive plays as well, tracking back.
So Brooks Lennon, the man of the match, brought to you by Heineken. But let me ask you now, Franco Escobar comes off his red card suspension Wednesday night for the home match against Inter Miami, and Jurgen Damm did get in there today. I'm not sure if he's 90 minutes fit, but what does the future show now for Brooks Lennon somewhere on this right side for Atlanta United?
He's got to compete for playing time because Jurgen Damm wasn't brought in here to sit the bench, and Franco Escobar has been a starter pretty much from the day he arrived here in Atlanta. So Brooks Lennon's going to have to compete for time. If he keeps playing like this, he's going to force his way into the lineup one way or another. That's the thing about where Atlanta United is right now. You've got Dom still getting his feet underneath him. You've got Kubo Torres still getting his fitness up. You've got Barco coming back from injury. You've got Hindman out right now. You've got a number of players who are not 90 minutes fit. When that happens, and hopefully it does, where you get everybody fit, you're going to have some tough lineup choices. It's going to be down to current form and work in training day in and day out to earn that time.
11 shots to 9, Atlanta United. 4 shots to 3 on target, Atlanta United. 61-39 the possession, Atlanta United in the match. It was 71-29 Atlanta United in the second half. Atlanta United also won 55% of the duels, passed at 86%, Orlando at 80%, 9 corners to 6 Atlanta United. Orlando fouled 25 times, Atlanta 13. That's what's going to happen when you're going to have a 2-goal lead. You're not going to win any fair play awards. Orlando was shown 5 yellow cards. And I will say this now, that dangerous clear by Antonio Carlos right at the start of stoppage time. You know, I said in the run of play, yeah, it's probably not going to affect the outcome of the match. But the more I think about it, the more I'm not so sure about that, because you probably would have had, if a penalty and or a red card came out of that, and both were possible solutions because Carlos was playing on a yellow, you're going to have 3 or 4 minutes of 11 on 10. And stranger things could happen where maybe you could sneak away with a second goal. That is still, to me, a sequence that I'm going to want to go back and watch again. There's no question that the incident occurred in the area. And then on top of everything, you know, I don't know if there's a reporter here to be appointed as a pool reporter, so I don't even know if we're going to get a chance to ask. What I'm most confused about, Jason, was play was stopped in the middle of an Atlanta United attack while a cross was in the air, as you correctly pointed out, and then a drop ball was given to Orlando after the on-field review.
The way the whole thing was handled was surprising in that. It was very confusing the way Nima Sagafi saw everything, because the way he stopped play, he thought it was a head injury. If he thought it was a head injury, he needed to stop play before Atlanta tried to recycle possession and a cross is in the air, because you're putting a player who is down on the ground in a difficult situation. It is reviewed. It's reviewed for, honestly, one of two things. It's reviewed for either a penalty or a straight red card. That's the only two things that would be qualified that it could be reviewed by. Now, we've seen plenty of situations, and this is what I think would have been the most likely outcome, is a penalty might be harsh there, because Antonio Carlos goes up, clears the ball. He doesn't foul Lennon in clearing the ball, but he leaves his boot up very high, obviously, because there's cleat marks on Brooks Lennon's neck, and that, at a minimum, is a second yellow. At a minimum, that's a second yellow. Referees have looked at a play that a VAR sent down and thought was either a red card or a penalty or whatever. If you decide it's not a red card there, you can still show the yellow. It's triggered by the VAR, Jorge Gonzalez, thinking that it could be a red or a penalty. But once you look at it, you can rule whatever you want. To look at that and say it's nothing is a little surprising. It doesn't change the outcome. That needs to be understood.
No, but it could have made it more interesting.
Absolutely could have. Either way, if it's a second yellow card and a send-off, if it's a penalty, there's lots of different things that could happen. It doesn't change the outcome. It was a very strange sequence and a very dangerous one, with Lennon getting kicked in that manner.
All right, let's hear from Stephen Glass, who's conducting a virtual press conference on Zoom.
Look like Orlando really focused on pressing your central midfielders in both halves. Mo Adams and Eric just didn't have a lot of time on the ball. They're really playing back to goal for a lot of the match. Would you agree with that? Was that something that you felt the team kind of struggled to play out of their press?
Yeah, I think so. Especially first half, I think when they'd set up, we knew that it was going to be a little bit tighter in the midfield. But there's ways of passing past that pressure. We didn't quite find a way to do that. Subsequently, when they were winning the ball back, we were a little bit out of shape, and then there was more space for their players to play. Generally the whole shape in the first half, we were probably a little bit too easy to play through, to play around. And we didn't really get good for the game. So, yeah, I'd agree with it.
Next question, Sydney Hunt. Sydney, your line's open. Go ahead.
Hey, Glassy. I want to talk to you about that play late in the second half that went to VAR, was not called a penalty. In your mind, should there have been a penalty called there?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. I think when a player gets kicked and he's got stud marks on his neck, I think it's high, it's dangerous. There's rules in place for that. Obviously, the referee's decided not to, and the video evidence has also done the same. I don't know if anything will happen after the event like it did last week. We had one player suspended last week, and we never even had a free kick given against us. So you never know what happens.
Sorry, next question, Eric Vega. Eric, your line's open. Go ahead.
Coach, tonight, the team seemed lost in the field, and after the sum of the substitutions, it seems to regain some type of form. What do you attribute this, and why do you think this happened tonight?
I think in the first half, there was obviously, we didn't cope, like Felipe's question, we didn't cope with their shape in the midfield. We didn't cope with the way they pressed and the way that they were using the ball. There was a way, we managed to fix it in the second half. A couple of substitutions, a couple of positional changes, little alterations. So there was things that were, where if you've been working for a group for a number of months, maybe it's easier to fix on the fly. But it took till we got until half time to get it fixed.
Next question, Joe Patrick. Joe, your line's open. Go ahead.
Hey, Glassy. I'm just wondering if those last 20 minutes that you had out there with some of the players that we know are going to be important for this team, Ezekiel Barco, Jurgen Damm, just kind of what your observations were from those last 20 minutes.
Yeah, obviously we rolled the dice a little bit. Especially, well, 30 minutes to go, we put on Kubo and we put on Ezekiel. So subs 3 and 4, if you like. Obviously, they're limited for time at the moment. So part of the process right now is getting everybody up to game speed to play as long as they can. The team itself is suffering because some of the top individuals are not able to play right now. But I think as long as people are moving in the right direction and the team's moving in the right direction, we're going to get to where we want to be.
Next question, Betsy Martinez. Betsy, your line's open. Go ahead.
Hi, Coach. What do you think was missing from the team that caused them not to get this win here at home today?
Hey, I think the first half we looked like we were waiting to see how the game was going to pan out. I think Orlando looked like in the first half they were making it more personal. They were up for the fight a touch more, and it took until halftime and we got our pride knocked a little bit that we came out fighting. So probably the first half performance in general was what cost the victory tonight.
Back to Sydney. Sydney, your line's open. Go ahead.
Glassy, how was Barco? What do you think of his performance when he came in the second half?
Yeah, he was good. He looked like he gave us a little spark. Obviously, you're pushing him for the 30 minutes we're able to use him for tonight. So I think he'll get a little bit of confidence from that, a little bit of fitness, and we'll look to continue building him up, obviously. We want our best players on the pitch for as long as we can. Obviously, he has been missing bits of training here and there and doing his rehab work. So it's never the same. And then there's no chance to play reserve games or anything like that to get him fully up to speed. So it's going to be using the first team games to get him up to where we need him to be. But a positive performance for him in the second half.
Yeah, and that is encouraging, by the way. Stephen Glass, the moderator, was Chris Winkler of Atlanta United. That's encouraging. I feel like at the end of the match, Jason, we talked about this during the last commercial break, you saw close to what might end up being the first choice group for Atlanta United. Not entirely, because you didn't have Fernando Meza out there at the end. You obviously didn't have Franco Escobar, and you did not have Mateus Hozetu out there. But you did have Barco, you did have Jurgen Damm, you did have Kubo Torres, who I think, you know, in the cases of Dom and Torres, you didn't bring them on to not be starters for this team. So as far as the attacking trident is concerned, that looked pretty close to first choice at the end of this match, and sure enough, it produced a lot of chances.
It did. I mean, you did get a spark, as Stephen Glass said, from Barco. I thought he looked just maybe a step slow. He got going as his time went on. You've got to get all of the weapons healthy and ready to play closer to 90 minutes. That will help this team, obviously, a lot going forward, because it looks disjointed. It's too disjointed at times because you're having faces rotate in and out because players are not fully healthy and you're trying to figure it out on the fly. I think one of the most important things that Stephen Glass said was, you know, as you go into that first half and Orlando does some things differently with their lineup, with the way things play out, you're not able to make adjustments on the fly as easily because Stephen Glass has been working with this group for, you know, two games. Like, yes, training time, but two games. You know, you learn those rotations, you learn those changes in game action. So it's hard to make those changes on the fly. He did it halftime. Second half was much, much better. But against a team with the quality of Orlando, you can't fall behind in giving up the goals that you did. You gave up goals from simple defensive mistakes, not even getting into the run of play in terms of the first half. You gave up a goal on a set piece. You gave up a goal when Brooks Lennon is out after an injury and you don't have a right back at that time and it wasn't organized properly. Those are the two goals you gave up. The other one is a giveaway in your own half as you're trying to push everybody forward, and it's sloppy, but you're chasing the game at that point. The two goals you give up that put you behind are set piece and miscommunication, disorganization defensively. Those things can't put you behind because then you're chasing the game, and Orlando is too good to give that game up.
All right. We're still taking your questions and your comments on Twitter at MikeConti929 and at Longshoe. We'll get to those later in the full-time report, but when we come back, we'll have the highlights of Orlando City's 3-1 win over Atlanta United here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Back with more full-time report
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Okay, back live at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. 3-1 Orlando City over Atlanta United in a wild match. We expected a lot of goals, and that is what we got. But Atlanta United put themselves in an early two-goal hole and could not climb out of it. Although, at least for a few minutes there, late in the match, we thought the ghosts of Orlando City past may sneak into Mercedes-Benz Stadium and allow Atlanta United to steal a result. Not the case, though. Atlanta United wants to remind you that for each Atlanta United clean sheet this season, they'll donate $2,000 to Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. One clean sheet in league play so far, so this year's donation total is currently $2,000. Let's get to the highlights. First goal off a corner. Atlanta United's defending on corners in the first half was very much problematic. This was a weird one, and I was confused. You're going to hear that confusion in this call. It's basically a shot on, a spilled rebound, and a put-in goal, but the offside flag came up. A lot of things happened. We'll unravel it in a moment, but here's how it sounded. Being marked by Miles Robinson. Here's the corner out of the far corner to DK. Over his head, and then it's sent in for a goal, but wait, the flag came up. The flag came up, and we're going to have an argument here. It did go in for a goal. Orlando is running back to the kickoff spot, and I guess the referee, Sagafi, has overruled the AR. The flag does not stop play. The whistle does, and it's 1-0 to Orlando on a broken play on the corner kick. It's Junior Urso's first goal of the year, and Orlando City has the 1-0 lead in the 14th minute. Yeah, tell that guy to shut up. Okay, I want to be really clear before we analyze the goal. The flag coming up had no effect. Okay, it's not like Atlanta United stopped play when the flag came up. We saw a situation like that in Nashville back in February where Nashville stopped play because the AR raised the flag and the referee did not blow his whistle. Totally different here. Ball was on its way in off the spilled rebound before the flag came up.
Yeah, the whole sequence made no sense from the referee side of things. But Urso, with a late run to the near post, completely unmarked, just runs in front of Walks and Adams and wins the header cleanly. I don't know why the flag would have come up. Junior Urso was a little surprised looking at the AR. It didn't make any sense. Surprised Brad Kazan couldn't keep it out. It's a hard header from Urso with a lot of power behind it, but it's right at Brad Kazan. It's low. It's tricky, but he can't keep it out. He spills it. It gets underneath him. It's a goal.
That made it 1-0 to Orlando. And prior to that goal, about 3 minutes prior, Orlando goalkeeper Pedro Galese, who you want to talk about a big difference between Orlando's of years past and Orlando now, the competent goalkeeping of Galese, he made some big saves. That save, a diving save on a header by Brooks Lennon, was a big momentum turner in the first half that led to the Junior Urso goal. And then in the 35th minute, after Lennon, it was Lennon, right, came off for an injury to be checked, just as he was coming back on, the ball was played behind him on what would have been his side of the pitch, and Chris Mueller converted for this goal to make it 2-0. Guzan's goal kick is headed forward right into the run of Mueller. DK overlapping. DK has it at the top of the 18. Bumped off the ball, but it rolls to Mueller, who scores. 2-0 Orlando City.
It's a really surprising situation because it's a free kick for Atlanta because of Lennon being fouled. It was where he really took an awkward fall after falling over, I think, Moutinho and George Bello. looked like he might have landed on his head or his back. He's checked out. He's off the field. He's waiting to be waved back on. The free kick was taken by Brad Kazan to midfield to the right side. It's won and played right back into the space where a right back would be. Miles Robinson gets stuck in between trying to cover space. Good movement from DK because he gets in between the two center backs, lays it off, combination play. Chris Mueller slots it home.
Sixth goal of the year, by the way, for Mueller, which leads MLS. He's having a tremendous year. Not he gets a lot of attention, but a lot of people were turned on to Mueller down in Orlando at the MLS's back tournament. He's had a fantastic year as well. That's an American-born player, by the way, 23 years old, from Schaumburg, Illinois, was first-team All-Big Ten at Wisconsin. 2-0 Orlando at that point. First time ever Orlando has had a multi-goal lead on Atlanta United. It's also the first time ever that Atlanta United trailed by multiple goals at home at halftime. But in the second half, Atlanta United was much, much better. And as they started to introduce more attacking players like Ezequiel Barco and Kubo Torres and then Jurgen Damm, they got the goal to cut the lead in half, and it was scored by Brooks Lennon. And return to Pitti now, about 30 yards from goal. Square to Barco, center of the park. Barco again hooks this over, this time to Jurgen Damm in the far corner. Jurgen Damm takes a touch, another touch. Pivots back to the left, then to the right. Here's a cross that Brooks Lennon heads in for a goal! And Atlanta United's gotten one back in the 83rd minute. Beautiful cross by Damm, and glad for Brooks Lennon, who's struggled at times in front of net this year, hasn't had a ton of opportunities, has had some good chances and some struggles. Really glad to see him finally open his goal-scoring account with Atlanta United.
Oh, Brooks Lennon's a right back, and he's getting forward to win that header. I mean, that just tells you where the game was at that point. Lennon was still able to get back and defend as he needed to. It's good work from Jurgen Damm as well, winning the 1v1. He's not beating the defender there with his pace. He's beating the defender there with his skill. Puts in a dangerous cross that Brooks Lennon goes to get. Lennon had been close a couple of times today, finally gets the goal that he deserved.
It was at this point of the match where I thought Atlanta United was going to steal a point. You just had that feeling that Orlando City, the Charlie Browns of the soccer world against Atlanta United, so many opportunities where they have not been able to get a win. I really felt at this point Atlanta United was going to get it. But what happens when you chase that equalizing goal? You get a lot of people forward, and a bad giveaway can be fatal. And that is what happened to produce the clinching goal by Nani. So now Anton Walks will take the free kick and play it short to Pitti. Back to Walks in the Atlanta end. Square to Pitti. Junior Erzo dispossesses him and has a breakaway. Junior Erzo into the box on Guzan. Cross shot, score, Nani. How does that happen? And Orlando City regains the two-goal lead.
It's a bad pass from Walks. Pitti has to do better with it as well. Both of them can take some blame on it. You're also stretched as Orlando's pressing with fresh legs up top, and they punish you for a mistake. And that's what they did really well today. You look back at the three goals they conceded. Bad passing through pressure on the last one. Miscommunication and disorganization on the second one. And a set piece, lack of picking up a mark on Junior Erso in the first one. Those are the goals that Orlando scored.
Junior Erso had a fantastic match, a goal in the first half, an assist on the second half, a goal and an assist for Mueller as well. Benji Michel, Daryl DK each had assists, and Nani had a goal. 3-1 Orlando City. It was after that third goal where we had that high boot sequence involving Antonio Carlos, who was playing on a yellow that was in the penalty area. We've gone through it once. If you want to ask us more about it, we can get into it in the next segment. But the bottom line is, I don't think it affected the outcome, but it certainly would have made the final 5 minutes quite interesting, especially if it had produced a penalty that was converted and if it would have sent Antonio Carlos off the pitch, because it would have been 11-on-10 Atlanta United for about 5 or 6 minutes. Not to be, though. And Atlanta United falls 3-1. Everything is better when Atlanta United wins. To date, a total of $3,000 has been donated to Piedmont Healthcare. As a not-for-profit hospital system, Piedmont Healthcare relies on the generosity of donors to expand healthcare services in our community. Atlanta United, proud to be a Piedmont donor. We'll get to your questions and comments on Twitter right after this on the full-time report with Atlanta United falling to Orlando City 3-1 on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Should be it. That is it. Full time. This is the Full Time Report
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
A 3-1 win by Orlando City over Atlanta United this afternoon. The first time in 10 meetings between these teams that Atlanta United has lost to Orlando City. Let's get to your questions and comments now on Twitter. Thank you for sending them in. And they are brought to you by, of course, TCL, the official smartphone partner of Atlanta United. All right. We're getting a lot of questions still about that end of match or end of regular time sequence where, again, Brooks Lennon, he obviously was kicked in the back of the neck because there were stud marks to prove it by Antonio Carlos, who was recklessly trying to clear the ball and caught Lennon right at the penalty spot, clearly in the area. It produced an on-field review. And after the on-field review, nothing further was given. And MLS Video Review, the official VAR account, tweeted that after a review for a penalty, it was determined that no penalty was given. So let's just go through this again, Jason, because a lot of our listeners are asking about this. Some of them are also suggesting that the disciplinary committee might have to get involved on Antonio Carlos here, potentially for a retroactive red, which is something that Franco Escobar got the other day for an incident with Dominique Baggi of Nashville. So many things in that sequence were confusing, so let's try to unpeel it.
Yeah, the whole thing was confusing. It's a clearance, and Antonio Carlos goes up, and he wins the clearance, and he is high in the air, clearing that ball. Brooks Lennon is in the vicinity. I don't think Brooks Lennon, you know, came in underneath Antonio Carlos. I don't think Brooks Lennon was looking to draw the contact. There was nothing in that area for me. Antonio Carlos, you could go a lot of different directions here, and that's what's so difficult about it. That's why I'm surprised that nothing was ruled on, because could be a high boot, which would be potentially a yellow card, a second yellow. You could say that, and this is kind of where I've fallen, although I could argue, I could be persuaded that it's a clear penalty. I didn't necessarily think penalty watching it, but at a minimum, I thought it's a high boot, it's a second yellow, it's a sending off. We've seen penalties given for that before. Mm-hmm. We've seen penalties not given for that before. Mm-hmm. That's a judgment call, that part. Carlos did win the ball. It wasn't that he fouled Lennon in the process of winning the ball. I think he won the ball clearly, but he is in a dangerous position with his boot up high. Obviously, Brooks Lennon's neck has stud marks on it. That's pretty dangerous. The penalty's 50-50 to me, but the fact that Antonio Carlos doesn't get sent off at a minimum for a second yellow is surprising. Then we go to the drop ball situation, which was another weird element of this, because drop balls have changed in 2019, and we saw one that was part of that rewrite of the laws of the game earlier in the match, where Pitti Martinez played a quick pass that went off of Nima Sagafi. Play was stopped. In the past, it would not have been stopped. He was just part of the field. Now it's stopped, and it's given back to Atlanta United. Sagafi did not have Orlando give 4 meters of distance when that ball was dropped. It didn't end up making a difference. But according to the laws of the game, In this situation, because the play was stopped as the cross was in the air from Atlanta as Lennon was down, according to the laws of the game, it says in all other cases, the referee drops the ball for one player of the team that last touched the ball at the position where it last touched a player, an outside agent, or as outlined in 9.1. So it was given to Orlando. So in that whole situation, you have a play reviewed for a possible penalty that is not given. You have an Atlanta player kicked in the head, and there is no punishment to the Orlando player who did it, even a second yellow. And you have a drop ball that gives Atlanta the ball back because Orlando clears it because of the injury at midfield. So Atlanta's like triple punished in this situation, right, where they did nothing wrong.
All right, to clarify a couple other questions we're getting about it, Turner, okay, Kirby wanted to know, would double jeopardy have come into play there?
No, that's only in a denying an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. That's a dog-so situation where you can't be sent off and giving a penalty there. This would not have been dog so.
There was also an instance in the first half, unrelated to the sequence we're talking about, where Brooks Lennon had a header that was saved by Galese, and there was a brief check of that. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure what the check was for. The reason why is we are sitting pretty much right on that end line at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I might be just a tiny bit behind it. I didn't think it was anywhere close to being in, but some TV viewers were saying that the ball may have been all the way across the line, and that's why that play was checked. Remember, there is no goal line technology in MLS. That would have to be a call made by the VAR, and I don't know what the situation is here at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, but you are very infrequently going to see that unless there's just such an obvious, you know, clear daylight between the ball and the end line, because in most MLS stadiums, there is not a camera that's right on the goal line that would make it clear and obvious.
Yeah, I never saw an angle that made me feel like they got that one wrong. There was a check, and that was the only thing they could have been checking. This is something where when ESPN carries matches, they have a sponsored goalpost camera. That needs to become a league-wide sponsorship. If you're not going to have the goal line technology because you're putting those resources towards video assistant referees, which I'm fine with, you can add the cameras in all of the goalposts around the league. Do it as a league sponsor. If you need to work with ESPN to get out of that contract and sort them out, go ahead. But that camera would fix it. It shouldn't be there in some games and not in all games. That doesn't make any sense.
Right. Or you could purchase the goal line technology, but I'm assuming the camera would be cheaper.
Oh, a lot cheaper. Yeah, because then it just goes back to the VAR situation. You have another camera to use. Right. That's the way you should do it.
Right. The other thing, too, I mean, if we really want to go down the wormhole of technology, we really should move off this. We spent a lot of time talking about this. This is one more thing I would say. Long term, I would love to see the league invest in Hawkeye for offside rulings and things like that. I think we're still a ways away from MLS being able to have that kind of ability to do it.
No, they explored it going into this past season. They explored it, I believe, going into this season, and they decided not to. Part of it is a major process with different venues to measure the pitch of where the cameras would be and the angles, so those lines are generated and generated as well as they can be.
My point being, though, if you invest in Hawkeye, then goal line tech is kind of taken care of by Hawkeye, or at least it could be.
Kind of.
You can put a line across the end line. It's a different system.
Yeah. But and not everybody is happy with it either.
No, that's true. Okay, Turner Kirby, I don't think the scoreline reflects the actual way the game played out. It's a proper scoreline for the play in the first half, but Atlanta looked a lot better in the second half. Should have been at least 3-2. I think that's fair.
That's fair. I mean, scoreline or not, Orlando won the match, and they were deserved winners. I think Atlanta was better than a two-goal loss, but, I mean, really, we're getting into semantics when we're at that point. Atlanta made too many mistakes to not be punished in the way that they were. They can't make the mistakes that they've been making defensively for a while now.
Trombone Steve, there were some good moments. Seems like we just didn't have that final pass and final shot today. That was very apparent in the first half. That's my comment, not Trombone Steve. He says, City's new manager is certainly better than they've had historically. We're in the middle of a disorganized moment, but Dom had a great start.
Yeah, this is something that I'm seeing quotes attributed to Anton Walks, to Brooks Lennon, and their post-match availability about speed of play, speed of ball movement, and it got too slow at times, and that was absolutely a factor. This team doesn't trust itself yet in the attack. It has to start playing faster in the attack. There were too many times that a ball was played down the right or down the left to Bello or to Lennon, and then later to Mulroney and other wingers, named a lot of different players, and the ball was not played into the final third quickly. There was hesitation. Orlando was very good defensively. You have to give them that credit. But Atlanta, until the very end where that urgency was unavoidable, it was too slow and too hesitant going into the final third. Middle third, Atlanta was dominant all day. Defensive third, too many mistakes. Final third, too slow.
Five Stripe follower says, Torres and Dom added a needed spark in this game today. Hopefully they get more time in the next game.
Yeah, it's just building them up. You've got to be careful because that next game comes around really quickly, and how are they going to recover from this one? You know, these are guys, especially Jurgen Dom, 45 minutes of action before he came into this match in 2020, in the calendar year. So, you know, where is he fitness-wise? It's all a guessing game at this point. The sports science department is trying to figure this out and give Steven Glass as much information as possible, but you're also dealing with the pressure of getting these guys on the field because you need them for this attack to be better.
Shiva, you may have already answered this, but in case you have a different thought, says, we weren't sharp at all today, so what is this team's biggest issue right now? Is it the pace of play?
Biggest issue, I think, is defensive mistakes. I really think that so far the biggest issue, because you're giving up goals. You go back to the MLS's back tournament, you include these. You're giving up goals off of mistakes. And that's the problem. The first goal against the Red Bulls in Orlando, it's a just complete breakdown of positioning defensively. The second goal, or the goal against Cincinnati, you're down to 10. Okay, throw that one out for a minute. The goal against Columbus, you get punished for a giveaway. Columbus comes in, strings a bunch of passes together, and you drop off and you drop off and you drop off and you give way too much space. The goals today, we've went through them. I think the defensive mistakes are the biggest issue, because those are the ones costing you games right now. The attack needs to be better, no question about it. But if you're getting better defensive performances and not giving up some of these goals, at a minimum, you're getting scoreless draws at the moment.
Yeah.
You're not giving up a lot of chances from the run of play. You're having defensive breakdowns that are punishing you.
John Nason's only takeaway is that Atlanta United, in his words, needs to find the magic formula in midfield, because none of the combos so far seem to dominate or even compete. And he wants to know, can you fix it with a formation moving forward?
I disagree with John in the sense that they're not competing. I think they're dominating the possession there against Nashville and today. The middle third is not my issue. If you want to look out wide in the midfield, different conversation. That is an issue, because you're not getting the penetration into the final third. You have to get more going forward into that final third. Things get too static in that phase of the match. If you're talking 30 yards from it, from the attacking goal, things get too static. The movement off the ball is not good enough, and it's not fast enough. Those are the things that need to change more than a shape change. The shape conversation is going to come down to, how do you get your best lineup on the field? Is it going to be in a 4-3-3, or is it going to be in something else?
Bear Ellis, who correctly, in my opinion, points out in all caps, got a finish. And that was a problem again today in the first half. We've seen this a couple times now. Certain players getting into dangerous spots and not being able, in one case today, Manuel Castro getting into an extremely dangerous spot, not even putting the shot on target. But I want you to respond to Bear's second of 4 points. He believes that we, meaning Atlanta United, should not be attempting to play out of the back anymore. Every MLS team except Atlanta has figured out that Atlanta can't do it.
No, that's completely – I completely disagree. If you watched the Community Shield today – on ESPN Plus, I thought Craig Burley gave you a really good explanation about why teams play out of the back. Arsenal played out of the back against a team that is one of the best in the world at pressing, in Liverpool. They didn't play afraid. You do that to create space in behind, because the game is all about creating space. If you just lump it long, you are not going to create more chances that way. You are then asking players to go up and win aerial duels, 50-50 at best. You're just looking for second balls. You're looking for deflections. You're just hoping. You're crossing your fingers. You're buying a lottery ticket. You built a team to be able to play out of the back because you've built a team that is strong on the ball. You are playing out of the back plenty. Your passing percentages are very high. Your mistakes today, set piece, one goal at the end, which was a bad pass from Walks to Pitti, and you were punished for it. But you also create opportunities when you successfully play out of the back. You can't get scared and turn this into 1974 English soccer, because one time you have a turnover. You can't get scared and play that way. You have a team of very talented players that you have to trust. They have to trust one another because they have to play faster. But you have to play in that manner, because if you don't, you talk about limitations. If your game is reliant on winning second balls and winning aerial duels, you don't have control over a game, period. You're hoping to get lucky. You're hoping for lucky bounces. That's not what this team is built to do. They have to do it better, more consistently, because one mistake is too many. But you have to be fearless in playing out of the back.
Well, they're going to have plenty of chances to find what it is they need to do, because they're going to have four matches over the next 2 weeks, and it starts Wednesday night against Inter-Miami. We'll have some quick thoughts on that one and wrap it all up right after this from Mercedes-Benz Stadium with Atlanta United falling to Orlando City 3-1 today on the Full-Time Report on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Back to the Full-Time Report. The home for our Atlanta United is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
United, for the first time in 10 meetings with Orlando City, walk out of the game with no points. 3-1 loss this afternoon at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Right back to work now Wednesday night against Inter-Miami. This was the scheduled home fixture between Inter-Miami. So your next three matches for Atlanta United are against Inter-Miami, Orlando, and Inter-Miami. So you are intimately familiar with your next two opponents, I guess you could say. And you already did all your scouting and film and prep work and lineups and everything to play this Miami team this past Wednesday night down in Fort Lauderdale, and then the match did not occur. But kind of feels like Atlanta United now is in a little bit of a need for 3 points in this match coming up on Wednesday, and I'm not sure how easy it will be. My question for you is, we saw Orlando very disruptive at times against Atlanta United, whether you want to call it a press or something else. Well, Miami is a team that does a lot of things similar to Nashville, which also was a pressing-style team. So what are the differences, in your opinion, between Orlando and Miami, especially considering Miami just beat Orlando?
Yeah, let's put the Miami and Nashville group together a little bit, because they don't want the ball. Orlando wants the ball. Atlanta wants the ball. Atlanta presses the least out of this group of four, and that needs to change a little bit over time. But Miami will sit deeper, and they have certain triggers when you come into the midfield zone, especially at midfield, that then they will step up and press you and push you backwards and then step up high. But they're going to sit into a medium to low block, and I think they're especially going to do that on Wednesday after playing tomorrow night against Nashville. They're going to come in more tired than Atlanta is. They're going to travel day of the game as well. All those things that make it more difficult, they're going to sit deeper and look to cause mistakes in the middle third. Atlanta has had better success with that. They need to have that kind of success against Miami. They need to play faster. They need to trust each other more in the build-up play. They have to create those openings.
And it'll be interesting to see, can Barco give you 90? Can Kubo Torres give you 90? Can Jurgen Damm maybe not give you 90, but can he give you 30? And then what will Heinemann's status be? He was completely out of the 20 today, day-to-day with a lower body injury. And you'll get Franco Escobar back on Wednesday as well. So it could be a much different, or at least a slightly different lineup for Atlanta United. Wednesday night, we'll be on the air 6:30 with the Five Stripes countdown before Atlanta United and Inter-Miami with a 7 o'clock kickoff, and we hope you will join us for that. For our producer, Dylan Matthews, on-site engineer, Miller Pope, and for Jason Longshore, I'm Mike Conti. Again, Orlando City, 3-1 winners over Atlanta United this afternoon. It's 2020, folks. Not much more you can say than that. We'll see you Wednesday night on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
You've been listening to MLS action of our Atlanta United. Tune in for complete match day coverage all season long. The home for our Atlanta United is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.